Banning Pegasus, a European watchdog says it's time to make the spyware illegal. Governments have been accused of using it to violate the privacy of activists and journalists. And who can stop Pegasus? And why now? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. Well, the balance between privacy and security once again back in the spotlight in Europe. This time, its data protection watchdog is sounding the alarm about the threat posed by surveillance software, specifically the Israeli Pegasus spyware. It allows governments to access people's personal information and decrypt private communications. The warning comes as part of the EU's efforts to ensure European institutions respect the right to privacy when they process personal data and develop new policies. The European Data Protection Supervisor says Pegasus could lead to an unprecedented level of intrusiveness, able to interfere with the most intimate aspects of our daily lives. A ban on the development and deployment of spyware with the capability of Pegasus in the EU would be the most effective option to protect our fundamental rights and freedoms. The official goes on to say, at the centre of debate on tools like Pegasus should not only be the use of the technology, but the importance we attribute to the right to privacy. Pegasus is one of the most powerful spywares out there. It's been developed, marketed and licensed to governments around the world by the Israeli company NSO Group. It's known for its zero-click attack capabilities. That means it can exploit vulnerabilities and break into a phone without the owner doing anything, like clicking on a malicious link. But once it breaches a device, the software can allow a hacker to record phone calls, copy messages and even secretly record video. Amnesty International has accused countries including Morocco, the UAE, Saudi Arabia and Mexico of using the spyware for political surveillance. Well, let's bring in our guests into the show. We have joining us from Geneva, Stéphane Dugan, Chief Executive Officer of the Cyber Peace Institute. In Brussels, Fanny Hedwigi, European Policy Director at Access Now, an NGO defending civil rights and privacy online. And in New Delhi, Siddharth Varadarajan, founding editor of the digital news portal The Wire. His phone was hacked using Pegasus spyware. A warm welcome, I should say, to all of you. If I could start with Fanny. So Pegasus has been around since 2011, hasn't it? Why is there only talk of banning it now?
One thing is for sure is that, as the European Data Protection Supervisor puts it, the question is whether spyware tools like Pegasus should have any place in a democratic society. And the answer is no. It has, and if it has no place in a democracy, then it has no place anywhere in the world. And while it's already a bit late, but we would like to see this ban following the EDPS's suggestion.
It's coming after 11 years, isn't it?
Well, these reforms always take a long time. And what the reports recently have shown is that, and the capabilities that you presented, it's not an exaggeration to say that the use of such spyware fully eliminates the right to privacy, not only the targeted person, but also to a large extent, all of their contacts. So since the infringement is so severe, it affects the essence of the right to privacy, and it can never be proportionate. There are no legal safeguards that can mitigate the harms, and the only appropriate solution is an immediate stop on the sale and transfer and development of such tools.
Okay, Stéphane, I'm wondering if part of the concern is the fear of heavy commercialization of software like this, that government spy agencies may not have a monopoly for very long if this is left unchecked.
It's a very good question, and I will build upon what has been just said before. It's a question of proportionality and escalation. This cannot be any proportional use of these kind of tools when there's proliferation of these tools. And they are proliferating because of the market, its supply and demand. So in a very strange situation where the private sector is dictating who can spy on who. Who can purchase the capacity to be in opportunity to transform your phone into a portable spy that is going to listen to what you're saying, this is going to, you know, to transmit what you're looking at and everything about your personal life. So the fact that there's a market that goes way beyond NSO, way beyond Pegasus, there's a lot of organizations that are specialized in this software and this offensive cyber capabilities, is key to the problem. It's a quicksand. We are building something on quicksand.
Talking about how it impacts personal life, Siddharth, you were a victim of Pegasus, as well as the fact that, of course, you are a journalist, you're a key member of civil society. How did it impact you and your job?
Well, when I found out last year that my phone had had been infected, obviously your mind does all kinds of analysis as to, you know, who have you been in touch with, what sensitive sources might have been compromised, so on and so forth. And essentially, when a journalist is targeted in the way that I was and other colleagues in India, I think a total of, you know, we found 40 plus journalists in the list of numbers from the leaked database as part of the Pegasus project. And we were able to confirm infections in, I think, at least 5 or 6 journalists' phones. The attack is actually on much more than the privacy of the individual. The attack is on press freedom. The attack is on democracy. The attack is on our ability to, you know, hold governments to account by the work that we do.
Siddharth, did you ever find out who targeted you?
The matter is under investigation in India right now because a number of victims approached the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has set up a committee to investigate and actually get to the bottom of this. My reasonable surmise, based on the fact that NSO says it sells only to governments, is that the government concerned is the government of India. So one of its agencies, because my number is part of a database of targets in whom no foreign government could conceivably have an interest. The only government that would have an interest in that range of characters, opposition politicians, human rights defenders, lawyers, journalists, etc., would be the government of India. So that's a reasonable surmise. And we know from the New York Times' reporting that a contract was signed in 2017 between NSO and the government of India.
All right. Of course, that is the suspicion. Of course, we can't say that that is the case for sure, just to be fair to the Indian government. However, I think Fanny wants to get in. Come in on that, Fanny.
Yes, that in addition to the reports and attribution based on those facts and suspicion, there are EU governments that have already admitted that they have bought and used the Pegasus software. One of these governments is Hungary or Poland within the European Union, despite all the exposure by journalists and activists done in the past. They have practically no shame of admitting the use and abuse of such technology against opposition figures, the journalists, lawyers, and potentially human rights defenders. So we hope that based on these facts, and again, not just reports, but actual admitting of these governments, the European Union institutions and member state authorities will follow up with investigations, such as the Hungarian Civil Liberties Union, which is a lead human rights NGO in Hungary, launched different legal avenues, and they are pushing, for instance, the European Commission to start an infringement proceeding against Hungary following the reporting and
Fanny, do you think that the EU will actually ban it? What's your feeling if you look into your crystal ball?
I believe that from a legal standpoint, there's no other choice.
Right.
Than to ban, but banning is a very, it's a word that needs to be put in legal practice, you know, it's not a simple act of banning.
It's not easy to actually put it into practice, absolutely. We'll come back on that, but I think I saw for a second there Stefan was angling to get in. Go ahead, Stefan.
Yeah, to build on what Fanny was just mentioning, the EU is in this very interesting situation where EU member states are buying this software. And at the same time, EU member states are victims of attack in the sense that people on the, in their national realms are targeted, if not officials of EU states. So it's interesting to see that the existing legal framework, because there's a legal framework that looks into proportionality, transparency, the fact that there's a dual use export rules that are in place in the EU, but all of that did not lead to a situation when there's control. There's a clear lack of control. So indeed, trying to enforce control bits by bits won't work. This is the demonstration. What we need to have here is a ban, is a moratorium, a global moratorium on the usage, development, and deployment of these tools.
Even if that's the case, Siddharth, it seems like so far from the cases we know, it's mostly governments and intelligence agencies which have been using the Israeli software Pegasus. Would they really care about a ban? I mean, some of these agencies are set up to work secretly and spy and violate laws of other, at least other countries and other nationals. Would it really make a difference if it's banned for the agencies which are currently using it, as far as we know?
Look, it depends on which countries and what's the manner of the ban. I think the route that the United States has chosen to follow, which is to sanction the company involved, NSO, by putting it on the entities list, that might well create a situation where NSO is then unable to offer its services to any government if the US action is taken to its logical conclusion. Of course, there are a number of governments that have chosen to, that are not concerned about the privacy implications. I should add, Sammy, that while I'm as ready as you are to cut the government of India slack in terms of saying, well, we haven't proved that they are the ones who've used it, the fact is that the government of India was given an opportunity in Parliament and in the Supreme Court to deny that they bought and used Pegasus against us, and they chose not to do that as well, right? So right. So there is a presumption based on denial, and I would say that, based on the absence of denial. So I would say that, essentially, this is a tool. This is, I think one of the other panelists used the phrase dual use. This is very powerful technology that obviously has an application as far as espionage or counterterrorism, et cetera, is concerned. But it's literally very well designed to be used for, targeting civilian and, political opponents of a government. And I think this is where the danger lies, that this is, going well beyond the individual privacy implications. We're talking about governments undermining democracy, right? In India, we have evidence that opposition politicians were targeted with Pegasus in the midst of an election. You have to think, what does this do to the fairness of an election? In Poland, even in Israel, the kind of evidence that's emerging suggests that Pegasus is extremely damaging, or spyware like Pegasus, to the very essence of democratic institutions, which is why I think a moratorium or a ban, no matter how it is designed and implemented, is absolutely essential.
It's absolutely essential. Is it easy, Fanny, to actually put a ban into practice, though? How much oversight is there over what some of these governments and intelligence agencies do, especially if you start talking about Secret Service programs? Who knows, right? I mean, Edward Snowden revealed a lot of things that surprised many people.
I was going to say that one investigatory tool at the moment is at the hands of the European Parliament, who just as after the Snowden revelations, they are doing this inquiry committee. But while I share your skepticism about how national security agencies will follow fundamental rights recommendations around data protection and privacy, especially in the European Union, but hopefully even more broadly, there are legal rules around national security. And just because they claim that the use of this technology is on national security grounds, it doesn't mean that there are no rules applicable. And this is the, let's say, hope that we can put this in practice. And there's a need to strengthen the democratic oversight over surveillance measures and specific legislations around European law should be enforced in a much better way. National data protection authorities in some countries have the right to investigate, which is the case in Hungary as well. but for unfortunate, maybe political reasons, the authority concluded a very formal investigation and didn't get into the specifics whether the concrete use against those people were lawful or not.
Interesting. Stefan, is there something that we need to address in terms of the relationship between big tech corporations and governments, and how much of a difference would a ban make to that kind of relationship that's developing?
To your question, how feasible is a ban and how to implement it? At least technically, a ban would be very helpful in the sense that it will disrupt the supply and the demand. All of this is about supply and demand. You have government entities that are asking for these tools. And then on the other end, you have just an ecosystem that is exploding in numbers of companies that are providing these tool sets, which means that public money today, taxpayer money, goes to fuel investments in these companies that are doing what? They're investing into making the internet not secure for everyone. So a ban would at least, you know, disrupt this demand increasing that is creating an increase of supply. And also, let's be very, very clear.
But let me jump in, Stefan, and ask, we've heard reports of some Middle Eastern governments simply hiring people who've worked for top-notch Western corporations and intelligence agencies. Is there any, I mean, can you really ban the software, the knowledge of the software? It's easily copied and developed by other governments who don't have a lot of care or respect for human rights and privacy.
No, that's exactly this. But if you start with a ban, if you start with a moratorium, you're going to disrupt the demand. You disrupt the demand, you disrupt the supply, which means there's going to be less people that are going to specialize themselves into the insecurity of the internet. So that's a very good first step in order to give a kind of a hit to this market that is just going unchecked. Something I would like to say, this is discovered because of the work that we, civil society, are doing. And here I would like to commend the work of Access Now, I mean, Fanny is there, and the Citizen Lab and Amnesty Tech and others that for years, you were saying 2011, I mean, investigated with their own mean these activities. I would like to see the same investment of public money in public procurement of these tools going to civil society, which are investigating this abuse to human rights.
Siddharth, how would a ban impact the court cases going on against NSO Group? Maybe you could also talk a little bit about your personal experience and the sort of legal action you're pursuing.
Well, you know, there's various sorts of legal action that's happening right now. NSO itself is subjected to, is facing court cases in America, thanks to WhatsApp and Apple. And I think Microsoft has joined that as well. And then there are cases that have been filed in France by some of the victims of Pegasus, and me and some colleagues in India are also party to that. And then there is the matter in India, which is not strictly a legal proceeding as in terms of a case against the NSO, but is right now currently at the stage of a fact-finding probe by the Supreme Court of India, which is trying to ascertain from the government of India whether it bought Pegasus and used it, and if so, on whose legal authority. And I think depending on what emerges from that probe, we will see a whole can of worms in both in legal and political terms opening up in India.
So this is just the beginning for you, Siddharth.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, for us, the matter in India really is a question of pinning responsibility on the government. So what happens to NSO in that sense is secondary. But I think NSO's own challenge is going to be quite considerable in the California court, where Facebook and Apple have tried to hold it to account.
Fanny, I'm wondering, why has Pegasus attracted so much attention? How is it different from other spy tools?
I believe that it's very tangible for everyone how the complete access to your phone that Pegasus has, which is actually a little bit even more than what you as a user would have as control over your phone. It can even record secretly conversations that you would not be aware of. So I think that harm is very tangible. Everybody understands how there's no limit between our life in the offline and the online world. And that's how there shouldn't be a limit between how we enjoy our rights both offline and online. And the specific cases that were revealed all around the world show that these spyware tools and Pegasus in particular are used to target political opposition, human rights defenders, and journalists. So not targets that you could even claim legitimate national security purposes. It's a clear abuse of such tool. But as I said, we would argue that legally even that there's a very, very limited, if at all, cases where you could use these tools, but these cases show how they were abused. And while I fully agree that there should be a control around the sale and we discussed export controls, but the real, not the real, but the additional shame, I think, in the past few months within the European Union has been that we are advocating for these norms externally while we cannot even enforce them within the borders of the EU. And that's why all EU institutions and the European Commission as well must really be a bit stronger with the member states to ensure that the Charter is in fact enforced.
Indeed. From a technical perspective, Stefan, Pegasus is not the only spy software out there or spy program we've known for years, if not for decades, of programs like Echelon, SIGINT, to Edward Snowden, that there's plenty of tools and ways for governments to spy on people, right?
No, there is. It's a long history of intrusion and spying. It's a long history of proliferation of offensive cyber capabilities. But what made the Pegasus story its way to the headlines is the scale and is the capacity for a private entity to dictate across the world who gets the capacity to spy on who. And this is absolutely going against any proportionality because it's exploiting vulnerabilities on everyone's infrastructure, the internet that you and I are using. You have people that are just looking into the holes in the codes. They are stockpiling this and they are waiting just to deploy for the one that can purchase it. So that's really the game changer here. The scale and the accessibility.
It is indeed. Siddharth, how much of a challenge to democracy is this Israeli spyware program? And when you think about what we've known so far of who's been targeted, sometimes opposition figures, sometimes human rights activists, lawyers, journalists like yourselves. That's basically the nuts and bolts of democracy, isn't it?
Absolutely. And this is why Pegasus is so dangerous, right? I mean, if nobody is denying that, you know, if you go way back in history, governments have, you know, so government-to-government espionage, right? You mentioned Echelon, for example. You know, government-to-government espionage is a well-known phenomenon, right? It's a legal, you know, it's not governed by any legal code or international law, quite frankly. But, you know, for example, the planting of a listening device in an embassy that one government would do during the Cold War, even now, I presume all that happens. Pegasus is that plus so much more. And, you know, what has emerged about the way Pegasus has been used is that this military, this capability that until now we had assumed was being used only for the purposes of one state trying to get one up on another. This has now entered the phones of politicians, journalists, human rights defenders, lawyers. In India, we actually found one case of a young woman who had accused the Chief Justice of India of sexual harassment. We found that 8 telephone numbers linked to her had been targeted with Pegasus, were on the database suggesting that they were targeted with Pegasus. And so you imagine how in the hands of unscrupulous law enforcement, in the hands of unscrupulous governments, in the hands of unscrupulous intelligence agencies, how this can be turned into a weapon to silence the voiceless and the weak, to target the political opposition, to steal a march on and suppress free media. So you get you basically cripple the ability of journalists to do their jobs. This is a recipe for dictatorship, quite frankly. So you can go through the motions of having elections and having courts and having having a free press. But if the ruling party, acting through its agencies, is able to deploy Pegasus and get a bird's eye view of what the opposition and what journalists are doing at all times, then right. you have undermined the essence of democracy. Of and this is a real danger.
That is indeed. I'm afraid we are out of time, so we're going to have to thank our guests, Stefan Dugan, Fanny Hidvigi, and Siddharth Varadarajan. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/insidestory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the entire team here for now, it's goodbye.